welcome to Revolutionary Woman. My name is Tess Silverman. Women around the world are constantly creating ways to make a difference in their communities, and today's guest is no exception. My guest today is Karen Mikos. Karen has been a registered nurse for 24 years. She spent the first 15 years in a clinical setting in the hospital, in intensive care units, emergency departments, and even a burn unit. The past 10 years, she has been in community nursing, doing home care. In the last 2 years, she has found her home in hospice. Doing hospice work has led her to achieve an end-of-life specialist certification and to open a death doula consulting business. She is able to provide guidance in obtaining healthcare proxy and power of attorney paperwork. Her services include creating legacy projects for patients and families, respite care and holding vigil, assisting with funeral and burial arrangements, as well as writing obituaries and holding life ceremonies. All of her services are available online and in person. Hi, Karen. Welcome to Revolutionary Woman. How are you this evening?
Hi, Tess. Thanks for having me. And it's been a pretty fabulous evening so far. So I'm doing well.
Oh, that's awesome. Wonderful. Okay, well, thank you for stopping by. So let's get started. So I read that you were, you grew up in North Haven, Connecticut. So can you tell me a little bit about growing up in Connecticut?
Sure. It was a pretty fabulous place to grow up. A young suburban area, you know, converted from a lot of farming into this like great suburbia. I went to a high school that had a total of about 500 people in it.
Wow.
It was just close knit and really, I don't have a lot to say that didn't work about it.
Oh, okay. That's great. Okay. So I read that you have two brothers. So what was it like growing up with being the only girl in your family?
Yeah, not only was I the only girl, but I'm the oldest.
Oh, geez.
So it was a double dipper there. my brothers were larger than life. They're both over 6 feet tall, both amazing athletes. I kind of had it that my middle brother could do no wrong. So there was this quiet, not so quiet competition between all of us.
Okay. I like that.
But, you know, we always came together at the end of the day to have family dinner. So it all worked out.
That's great. So, yeah, I read that sports played a big part in your family. Were you into sports as well?
Yeah, I've been pretty active in athletics my whole life. Played three sports in high school and then went on to be part of the crew team at Northeastern University in Boston.
Oh, wow. Did you like crew?
Oh, I loved it. It was something I had never done before. And I was able to use my size and my strength to my advantage. And it was just incredible.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, so I read that sports was even talked about during dinner. I mean, you know, that's not usually what people talk about. I mean, I don't because, you know, at my family dinner, hey, we didn't really talk during dinner. It was just like, okay, we were on to our own little corners. But was that something you still, is that something you still do when you get together nowadays with your family?
Oh, my goodness. We are the biggest Yankee fans.
I'm a Yankee fan. Okay.
My dad
is a big Yankee fan.
Yeah, my dad will send me messages, you know, are you watching the game? Did you see Judge hit another home run?
Wow.
You know, we talk about all kinds of sports. My brother, the same middle brother, was actually the president of the youth football team or league in town. Oh. For over 20 years.
Wow.
That's amazing. It was a language I quickly had to learn in order to be able to communicate with my family.
Or else you got left out. That's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so funny. Wow, that's amazing, though. Because, like I said before, you know, different families have different dynamics. For us, you know, I mean, growing up, I grew up in a two-bedroom apartment building, so there really wasn't much of a table or a dining room. So we all kind of congregated in either a little part of the kitchen or in the living room and watching TV. So, you know, but it wasn't until we had our daughter where we actually had dinners and, you know, especially with my in-laws when she was growing up. So I really value that. And it's great that you still kept up with it. That's really cool. Okay, so you went to Boston, Northeastern, for college. But you stayed after college. What was it about Boston that made you stay longer?
Oh, my God. I love Boston, even to this day. There was a vitality in that city that I really connected to. And it wasn't as big and scary as New York City was, or even is to some degree.
Right.
You know, it had everything that I wanted. It had, you know, great museums, great restaurants. It had, you know, theater that would come in. It had a youthfulness and tourists, and it just had everything. It was on the water.
Yeah.
You know, easy access. So I don't know. I just really loved it. It was far enough away from home that I felt like I was kind of on my own, but close enough, you know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours where I could kind of come home when needed to get recharged and, you know, go back. So it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect.
Okay, cool. So Karen, you became a teacher, but left that career and became a full-time babysitter for your nephew for a while. What was the circumstances behind you leaving your teaching job?
The teaching was one of the hardest things I had ever done. I was working inner city special education. There wasn't a lot of money, there wasn't a lot of support, and I had it that I wasn't making much of a difference. And that really kind of ate at me. And then I had started having thoughts about, you know, maybe teaching isn't for me. Maybe I need a change. And my brother got married and his wife was pregnant and he had my first nephew. And I just suddenly had this overwhelming urge to go home.
And so how long were you caring for your nephew?
So he was 6 months old when I started like being a full-time caregiver to him. And I went until he was a year and a half. So about a whole year.
Okay.
And that allowed his wife or his mom, my nephew's mom, to go back to work. She was a physical therapist in a hospital here. And my brother was going to school to be a chiropractor.
Oh, okay.
So he was, I think it was like his last quarter of school. So it allowed him to finish school and you know, they saved on money because they didn't have to put my nephew
in daycare.
Full-time daycare.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, he was with family.
Exactly.
And, it was so much fun. And him and I, my nephew and I, have a special bond, I think, because of it.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was just great.
Okay, so when you left your teaching job, you became an EMT and then became a nurse. So but you became a nurse for 23 years. So was nursing something you always wanted to do, like in the background?
No, I didn't know I wanted to be a nurse.
Oh.
I wanted to. So when I came home, I wanted to do something more than just, you know, take care of my nephew. I looked at different volunteer options. And I decided, I'll become an emergency medical technician and I'll volunteer for this local fire department.
Okay.
And I loved it.
Oh, wow.
Loved the chaos. I loved the drama of the trauma.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Huh. And then that kind of pushed me forward into, I think I want to be a nurse, you know?
Okay. And then from there, you were in nursing for 23 years. That's a long time. And then from there, you realized that your true calling was in in hospice, and you became a hospice nurse. So what made you decide that this was the path for you?
I think when I was in nursing school, I had done some training, some clinical time in the oncology floors. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like that was a real special experience. And it just spoke to my heart. Mm. And although at that time, I did not want to enter oncology or hospice, I knew mm-hmm. that I would come back.
Mm. Okay.
So I did all the other things in nursing that I've always wanted to do, emergency room and ICU and mm-hmm. all that exciting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the time was just right. And I decided that, you know, I'm ready for hospice.
Wow. Okay. And how long were you a hospice nurse?
I've been doing hospice nursing now for 5 years.
Wow. Okay. Okay, and Karen, so you are the founder of the Quietest House. Can you tell me what the Quietest House is and what prompted you to establish it?
Yeah, so the Quietest House is a real passion project of mine. It is a consultation business.
Mm-hmm.
So along the way here in the last year, I've become a certified end-of-life specialist. Mm. So the other word for that is a death doula.
Mm-hmm.
And at the Quietest House, I provide services and conversations for folks at end-of-life, mm. whether it be, you know, before when you're making your plans, you're picking out a funeral home, maybe you're making arrangements for a power of attorney or a healthcare agent. Also, we have conversations about creating legacy projects. Mm-hmm. How do you want to be remembered?
Hmm.
You know, okay. And, yeah. and the different ways that that can be created. I also provide bedside nursing at the time where folks are transitioning.
Mm.
And then even a little bit afterwards, mm-hmm. After somebody's passed, I can hang around and just provide comfort and, you know, make sure that the body is transferred to the funeral home or wherever, whatever the choice is at that time.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Did you have an aha moment when you decided this is what I really want to do? This is what I was meant to do?
Yes. I was in a course called the Wealth and Impact Bootcamp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a course about finding out what your true passions are and then making an impact in the world with mm-hmm. that passion.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, I was talking about being a coach and, you know, that's what I wanted to do. And somebody who had listened to me for a couple of months said, "Have you ever heard of death doula?" And it was as if she had like finally shown some kind of light onto my heart. And I was like, oh my God, I know, I've never heard of it. And that's it. That's the thing. That's the thing that I want to be when I grow up.
Wow. So up until then, you really had no idea that this was where you would be, you know, where you would wind up. Because
I had no idea.
But I mean, you know, being a nurse and caring for someone, it kind of goes hand in hand with being a death doula then, because you are still taking care of people, still giving care,
mm.
right?
Yeah, I've always had a knack about, you know, at end of life, whether mm. it be, you know, in the emergency room and something happened or, you know, post-surgical, something goes bad. I've always had a knack of being able to tell not only patients, but their families just kind of like the truth, mm-hmm. the bottom line, the truth here.
Yeah.
Not that I'm comfortable with it, but
yeah, I was going to ask you. Yeah. If that was...
I feel like it's a part of, what would be the right word? It'd be a part of like my duty, my obligation
mm.
to speak the truth, especially at end of life, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And it's not my truth. It's like just the facts. Like, I can't explain to you clinically why I think this person is dying. And then I can tell you an approximate time frame given all my experience mm-hmm. over the years.
Okay. Huh. Okay. Well, you offer your clients various services, like you mentioned, end of life planning, healthcare proxy, living will, respite care, vigil watch, grief support. But you had mentioned legacy projects. I had never heard of that. So legacy projects is something that you create with the family of the bereaved.
Yeah, it can work a couple different ways. It can be done by, let's say, the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say there's a grandfather and he hires me and he, you know, he's not sick or anything, but he wants to prepare for mm-hmm. his end of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll enter into a conversation with him about how would he like to have his grandchildren, let's say, remember him.
Oh,
it could look like writing each one of his family members a letter.
Mm.
It could look like, even, you know, with today's technology, a video or mm-hmm. creating a website.
Huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, there's just so many opportunities for folks to be remembered nowadays with all the technology.
Right.
So we have conversations about that.
Okay. Well, okay. So death is a big subject, but and it's also like, I mean, I for one, you know, kind of steer clear of that. I mean, but why do you think some people don't want to talk about death or how to prepare for a loved one's death? Because I know when my father passed away, while he was sick, he was definitely sick for years, but even when he passed on, I still wasn't ready, you know.
Yeah, for I think many reasons in this culture, in this country, we don't talk about death and dying.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's like one of the last great conversations for this country to tackle. And there's actually quite the movement. I think it's been kind of brought on by the pandemic
mm-hmm.
where there's like a grief crisis. You know, and people don't know what to do with their grief. There's just so much of it this time.
Right.
That people are just really yearning for the okay to talk about it.
Yeah. And
I think as a death doula, as a registered nurse, that's something that I can really make an impact in.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you for know. Sure. Yeah, I mean of anyone, you know, it's like you are definitely the right person who can be there for, you know, for the family who are not ready, or even if they are ready, I don't know if anyone is ever ready. Like you said, in this culture, we don't really talk about death, and you know, like we may watch films about it and TV shows about it, but generally it's really not a topic that most people discuss, because it's again end of life, you know. It's like, why do I want to talk about that? I'm fine right now. You know,
it's coming for everybody.
Yeah, yeah,
it's unavoidable.
Yes,
at least at this point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but
and it's often, you know, it's often scary. It's mm-hmm. often a mystery. And I think that we could actually create it to be something powerful, mm-hmm. something beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different, you know, green burials, cremation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can turn your ashes into diamonds and all kinds of stuff nowadays.
Oh, my gosh. Huh.
Really, really. It's amazing. It doesn't have to be the way that it's always been.
Right.
And it could actually be like an annual ceremony every year. This is the day, you know, Poppy passed.
Mm.
And, mm-hmm. you know, we can light candles and release flowers and, mm. do all kinds of really amazing things to remember our loved ones and actually right. cause a space to be created where love and loss can coexist.
I love that. That's something that's so different, and it's really powerful because while you have lost that person, you know, they're still, you've never lost their love for them. So
yeah.
it's a great continuity to do it that way. And I don't know if you ever saw, did you ever see the show The Good Place?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's a show that was on Netflix, I believe. And it was really, you know, it was about death and how, you know, people were like the afterlife. And it was kind of great because it wasn't, yes, there were like some, you know, like a lot of situations and some, you know, like different, it was a comedy. It was supposed to be a comedy, but it was really well done. And what I loved was, I'm not spoiling anything, but at the end, I just loved the way they portrayed the afterlife after the afterlife, you know, and it was just like, oh, okay. You know, and it was beautiful. It was really well done. And I'm like, huh. Okay, well, if it's like that, then I guess I'm okay, you know?
Yeah, then I'll sign up.
Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, memory, my understanding of like death and the afterlife is like, okay, you're either being buried or, you know, being cremated. And I'm like, oh, okay, you'll be turned to dust. And it's not really pretty. And it's not really, you know, I know it's not meant to be, but it's also like so finite, you know, and it's like, okay, yeah, it's true. It happens to everyone. But how do I want to, it's like, you know, for me, it's hard to fathom, like, okay, I won't be here any longer, you know, and how will I be remembered, as well as, wait, so what happens afterwards, you know? What I love about your role is that you are presenting death in a positive way, I guess, and also it's not a scary thing, you know. So
yeah, and I'll be there.
Yeah, right. You're actually giving them someone to, you're giving them an opportunity to really remember their loved ones in a great way, you know, in a different way. But yeah, I had to ask you about that question because I'm just like, you know, I don't know how I would be like when it's my time, you know. But it's really it's something that it should be discussed. But of course, it's like it's not really until it's almost your time or, you know, it's too late, you know, so it's hard to like get back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then so that's a great point, because when it's not discussed ahead of time or there hasn't been any plans, then it's left to, you know, the children to figure it out.
Right.
However,
yeah.
If it is something that has been discussed and wishes have been made known, then the folks, the children are just there to honor the wishes of their loved one.
Right. Yeah.
There's no other stigma attached to it. There doesn't have to be a conversation about, well, do we bury him or do we cremate him? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, dad's already made his wishes known. Right. And we're just going to follow like this one last time.
Right. Right.
What his wishes are.
Yeah. I mean, I have two sisters, and when my dad passed away, I had no clue if there was any conversation, but apparently there was. I just wasn't part of it. I was like, well, what are we doing? You know, and I mean, he was cremated, but I was like, was that the plan all along? Or, you know, and my older sister said, yeah, that was like, that's what he wanted. I'm like, okay, you know, but it wasn't spoken about, you know, because it was still hush hush. So,
yeah. And thankfully, you didn't give your sister a hard time.
No, because I mean, you know, we knew that something was going to be done. I just didn't know what it would be. You know, it's like I wasn't. Yeah.
Well, imagine if, you know, you and your sister had some kind of argument about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, you felt strongly against cremation or, you know, something like that is always available to happen as well.
Right.
Which is why this conversation is so important to have, or write it down. If you're not going to have the conversation with everybody, let's write it down.
Right. You make a great point because, you know, so many times, like, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let's say, and then what then?
Yes.
You know, and I definitely don't want to leave that up to my daughter who have to like go through so much already. So, well, thank you for that. So can you mention a time when you thought you needed to do something that could affect your life and others? I mean, was it when you decided to establish the Quietus House?
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, after I heard that word death doula, and then I started looking at the world and what I'm calling this grief crisis. I'm like, well, what can I do about it? Where can I create an impact and really cause a shift in this conversation? And one of the things that I'm most proud of that has come out of the Quietus House is a collaboration with a gentleman. His name is Craig Addy. He's a really amazing piano player. And he shared a story with me about how he lives in Vancouver and how he has a small business where people, this is pre-pandemic, used to come over underneath his grand piano and he would have a conversation with them. Maybe it's a couple and they're celebrating their anniversary or it's somebody's birthday. He would talk to them about their life and he would take their experience and recreate it on the piano while they sat underneath his piano.
Oh, wow.
So I thought, oh my goodness, this would be amazing to get a group of people together to remember and reflect on their lost loved ones. And through that conversation, have Craig recreate it on the piano.
Wow.
And we have done this 3 times now. We do it right on Zoom. We have 10 people attend. And it's just been like 2 hours of amazing healing, creation of a community. And, you know, people actually get to hear a song that represents their love.
Aww, that's beautiful.
Yeah, and music is so powerful, you know?
It is.
Everybody can remember, you hear a song and a memory immediately pops up. Well, this guy can take your words. Let's say you were to share with me about your dad and, you know, who he was for you and kind of verbalize your love and what it's been like for you. And he'll take all those words, all that experience, and turn it into like 2 or 3 minutes on the piano. And you can hear your words in the music. It's unbelievable.
Wow, that's really something. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, we'll have to talk about that after this. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So is there someone you would give credit for where you are now?
There's lots of people. Okay. I would definitely, first and foremost, you know, give thanks to my parents. Their unrelentless love and support of me and everything that I've been up to all my life. You know, it's like this automatic safety net. I cannot fall. So I'm free to leap. And then specifically around the Quietus House and what I'm doing today, I would say I'd have to give thanks to Marcus Bell, who is the creator of the Wealth and Impact Boot Camp, and his right hand gal, Beth Udoma.
Okay.
They've really been in my corner and really, I would say, pushing me to be my best.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so is there something you haven't yet done that you would like to do? Or, I mean, is there a goal that you'd like to achieve, a personal goal for you?
A personal goal.
Or something you haven't yet even thought of trying but would like to do.
Wow, that's a great question, Tess.
okay.
What do I want to do? Yeah, so I want to talk on a stage.
Oh, that's awesome.
In front of a lot of people, like a Brené Brown kind of talk, mm-hmm. like a TED talk, yep. like a
yep.
something like that about death and dying, about
Ooh.
Not talking about death and dying.
Oh, wow. That would be awesome. Oh my gosh. Okay. I got goosebumps with that one. You're right. We'll have to talk about that after. Okay.
Great.
We have two things to talk about after this. Okay. So for anyone who would want to know more about The Quietest House, how would they go about it?
Yeah. TheQuietestHouse.com. It's also on LinkedIn, and it's TheQuietestHouse. House.com.
Great.
And then it's also on my LinkedIn page as well.
Great. So what is your goal for The Quietest House?
My goal is for it to be a household name mm-hmm. that everybody has. It's virtual, right? Like it's not, mm-hmm. it doesn't really exist in reality. It's a virtual, like a place where they can go mm-hmm. to discuss about end of life.
Yeah. Okay. And where would you like to see yourself in 5 years?
I would like to be traveling around the world holding what I'm calling grief festivals.
Ah. Huh. Okay. I like that. And if you could go like into that, how would you see it play out? But I mean, where is that something that you would do like in different states or in different countries?
Yeah, like a weekend retreat where folks can come
uh-huh.
and there will be various options, workshops where they can participate in to explore their grief. Mm-hmm. They can process some of that grief. They can just be with others. I would love for Craig and his piano to give us a concert at, you know, on Saturday night.
Mm.
I want great food and maybe somewhere out in nature where we can take meditative walks and just kind of renew ourselves, renew our bodies, renew our love, and just remember and reflect on our lost loved ones.
Wow, that's really beautiful, Karen. Okay, so if you had one thing to change that you wish you had done years ago, what would it be?
I think if I could change one thing, I would have wanted to be nicer to my brothers.
Really? Why would you say that? What do you
mean? Oh, well, you know, I think as the oldest and the only girl, I shouldn't assume, but I'm going to just say there probably was a rather large chip on my shoulder.
Mm.
I would have rather have not had that chip on my shoulder with them.
Okay. Okay. And my last question is, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Like, just go for it.
Oh, cool.
Just go for it. Don't let anything stop you. You got the goods.
That's awesome. Karen, thank you so much for taking the time to share your life and your stories with us. And, you know, I wish you so much luck with The Quietest House. And, you know, if that happens with the Grief Festival, you know, that's incredible. I really would love to, you know, just follow up with you and see how it's going. And I love that you are making something that's so, I guess, maybe taboo, not to be taboo and to really be celebrated, you know, instead of being pushed back, it's really up front so people can actually celebrate their loved ones and not, you know, be so afraid about it. So I love that. But thank you so much for sharing that with us, and, you know, good luck with the Quietest House. And I really hope that you get to talk on a TEDx stage. That would be amazing. So
thank you, Tess. Thank you so much for your powerful listening and all that you do for your guests and, you know, really in the world. So aww, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being in my life, Miss. Thank you for being so, so understanding about everything else. But well, with that, I will say goodnight and I will speak with you soon.
Awesome. Right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. That's our show for today. I've posted more information about Karen Mikos on RevWoman.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in every Thursday for another episode of Revolutionary Women. You can listen to Revolutionary Women on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. Just a little note, I've launched a Patreon account to support the show. All proceeds will go to producing and editing the episodes to give my poor husband a break for being my personal IT and production department. He wrote this. The address is patreon.com/revwoman.